science enthusiasts, welcome to the Science Podcast. This is episode 25 of season 1. I'm your host, Jason Zukowski. I'm a high school chemistry teacher, and Bunsen, the Twitter science dog, is our doggo. If you want to follow Bunsen, he's on Twitter at BunsenBurnerBMD and on Facebook and Instagram too. We are on our last episode of season 1. Don't worry, we'll be back. But this episode is so cool, we're splitting it into part 1 and part 2. Why is it so cool? This whole episode is devoted to the dogs of social media. In part 1 of episode 25, we've got Rex the TV Terrier, Benny the Ice Skating Doggo, and we have Samson the Science Dog. Can't wait to share those interviews with you. If you've been with us from the start, thanks for coming back time after time. The podcast will always be free to download, and our patrons make it possible. If you'd like to sign up to help improve the show, head over to patreon.com/BunsenBurner and pick one of the tiers of support. You know, anything is possible when you have a dog. They make life less rough. Come on, that joke was doggone funny. Okay, I'm barking up the wrong tree. Let's start the show, because there's no time like science time! This week in science news, we're going to take a quick look at how a single-celled organism, a protist, is reacting in very complex ways to threats. It may be a little bit of a myth that single-celled organisms really have a very simple life. They don't. There's a little teeny-tiny protist called Stenta rosalie. It looks like a little trumpet, and they found that this little guy, or girl, or it, doesn't have a sex, it can dodge, duck, or flee in response to stimulus. Now, that's almost as many D's as there is in dodgeball. Dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge. It's a great movie. Anyways, back to protists. So in the study, in December 5th in Current Biology, a team looked at how this little protist responded to stimulus. Now, this protist has been investigated in the past. In 1906, actually, an American zoologist, Herbert Jennings, discovered that it had some really complex behavior when he messed with it. So Jennings, what did Jennings do to it? He bugged it, right? He took a pipette filled with a chemical irritant and squirted it at this protist. And the protest didn't have simple responses. It had really a complex series of responses it would do to the chemical irritant. It would dodge it, or it would squirt water out of its mouth to kind of push away the chemical irritant. And when all else was failed, it would abandon its post wherever it was and float away from the chemical irritant. The team at Harvard Medical School took a look at what Jennings discovered and took it one step further. The head researcher, Gwana Wardena, and his colleagues took a look at this really old experiment. And instead of chemicals, they shot little plastic beads at the protist and recorded their behavior. They did 57 different experiments. Initially, the data was a little puzzling, but when they analyzed it, a hierarchy emerged. More often than not, this little protist would bend away or try to spit out the beads. When push came to shove, the little protist would contract or detach. And the researchers never saw a cell detach without contracting first. When the researchers took a look at the hierarchy of its decision-making, they found a pattern that when it contracted to get away from the beads, there was a 50-50 chance it would contract a second time or just detach. That's like a flip of a coin, right? That gives the protist some bamboozliness when being chased by a predator. Predator can't always know what the protest is going to do because it's kind of random. In conclusion, the team that looked at this protest made a really cool statement that all of the cell biologists that study cells and study single-celled organisms maybe need to look at their behaviors differently. Maybe it's more complicated than we think. And how does it make that decision? Well, that's a really interesting idea right there. What is kind of the Rube Goldberg machine of processes the little protist has to go through to get that response? That's kind of cool when you think of it, right? Protists don't have a brain, or what we think is a brain, but it clearly was able to make some pretty complicated decisions. Where are those decisions coming from? Anyways, I think that's a really cool little story about how the single-celled organisms are maybe smarter than we think, and that's science news for this week. Before we get to the interviews, just a quick word from one of our sponsors, forcatsanddogs.com. That's FOR catsanddogs.com. What do they got there? They got some adorable gear for your dog. They've got blankets. They've got leashes. They've got vests. They have all the cute gear you could need for your pets. And if you use the code Bunsen, you'll get a little discount at the store. There's a link ready for you to click on in the show notes to the show. Check them out. That's for catsanddogs.com. The next guest on the Dogs of Twitter part of the podcast this week is the parent of Benny. And who am I speaking with, just so everybody can have an idea?
Cheryl Del Singro.
Cheryl Del Singro. And Benny is Benny your dog?
Yes. It's Benny the ice skating dog, and he's my dog.
Ah, Benny is the ice skating dog. Where are you in the world, and like, what does Benny do as an ice skater?
Well, we're here in Las Vegas, probably the least likely area to have an ice skating dog. He's with skates on his front feet and skates around on regular ice skates.
Now, did you have to train him to do that? Like, did he require a lot of training to be able to skate on like dog skates?
Well, Benny's actually trained really good besides the ice skating. He can do like 60 to 70 on the ground tricks. He's trained in a lot of like obedience, agility, a lot of dog sports, dock diving. He's done all the different dog sports. And I'm a retired professional figure skater. And so just came up one day and we tried it and he could do it the first day we went.
Now, does he enjoy it? Is it one of those things where he just loves to work and he loves it.
Oh, yes. He loves to work and he loves on the ice. He likes the cold. He likes to be on the ice, and he'll go out and skate around all by himself, even if I'm not on the ice. He'll just go out and skate on his own.
Oh, that's so cute. Aw. What type of dog is Benny?
He's a yellow lab.
Aw, I love those dogs. They're such good dogs. How old is Benny?
He's probably close to 7 now. He's a rescue dog, so we don't know his exact age, but he's got to be getting close to about 7.
So,
6 and a half, I say.
Oh, yeah. Now, okay, so he skates with what? Is it a specific team he skates with, or is he skate with?
He skated for the Las Vegas team out here, the Vegas Golden Knights. He skated at one of their games just a couple weeks ago before the second ice cut. And it just went crazy. 18,000 people were there. The place was rocking and rolling and it was loud and he just did his thing and the people were screaming. It was incredible.
Oh, that is so good. As we were talking before the interview, I'm from Canada and Canada hockey is synonymous with Canada. Everybody has usually an opinion on hockey in Canada. So that's pretty cute that you have a skating dog. And you're right. If you're in Nevada, Las Vegas, there's not a lot of ice out there for him to practice on that isn't on a rink.
No, exactly. And it's funny because the game he skated with the Golden Knights was against the Calgary Flames and we won.
Oh, that's okay. Truth be told, I might alienate some Canadian listeners, but I grew up cheering for the Edmonton Oilers with Wayne Gretzky. So if you cheered for the Edmonton Oilers, you kind of dislike the Flames, and the Flames fan dislike the Oilers. It's a huge rivalry in this province, which goes because there's not a lot of professional sports teams in Canada to cheer for. And what does he do when he's on the ice? Like, do you have a routine that he does?
Yeah, we have a routine. He can do a jump, like a jump over something. He does a jump. He does like 2 in a row jumps.
Oh.
He carries his hockey stick. He also picks up the hockey puck, and we're working on him trying to hit the stick on the puck.
Oh, my goodness. If you figure that out, you will, and that will break the internet. I guess. That is crazy.
Well, he's done it a few times, so he doesn't have it down pat yet, but pretty soon we're going to be able to, I think, get some video of him doing it, so hopefully that'll be next.
Aw. And I think I'm doing a good job with Bunsen when I get him to pose and he's chill with posing with his science gear on and you've got your dog skating around on ice. That's amazing. Good for you.
He's a pretty cool dog.
Oh, good for you. I've been asking all of the guests who have like dogs of Twitter, dogs of social media. Do you have a couple memorable stories you could share about Benny? Like things that come to mind that really stand out in your life together with him?
Well, yeah, he's just a really incredible dog, and you know, he's a rescue dog, like I said, and just finding him and getting him away, I got him, was a pretty good story, because we were looking for a lab in particular, but I wanted to rescue a lab. And so I was watching online and monitoring the shelters around the Las Vegas area and stuff. And one of the rescues here posted his picture, and he was actually in Salt Lake City. He's from Salt Lake City. And but he had been in the dog pound for 6 months.
Oh.
And he got adopted one time for one day and was returned.
Oh.
And he was in there 6 months, and he finally got put on the euthanasia list.
Oh no.
And so the rescue here was monitoring all the local areas for labs, or the near areas, and he was in Salt Lake City, and they posted him, and they needed somebody kind of commit to taking him. And when I saw his eyes on the internet, his big black pool of eyes just staring right out, there was something in there, and I didn't see him or anything, and I said, I want that dog. So the lab rescue was able to arrange for him to be transported down, and he went into their foster home until I passed all the, you know, credentials you have to have, you know, the vet vouch for you and all that stuff. And he was in there for about a month. And then when I got him, it was like he was the perfect dog from the day I got him.
Aw, that's so good. What a heart.
He was a little less than a year old, I think.
Oh, what a heartwarming story. That is, kudos to you for taking on a rescue dog and then transforming him into this amazing ambassador, really, probably for dogs everywhere. Like if any dog can be trained to do what happens with your dog, that just bodes well for all rescue dogs, right?
Exactly. I said he's the prime example of what you can do with the rescue dog. I always say that he should be the poster child for rescue dogs. Exactly. We have two other dogs that are rescues too, and they're very cool dogs too, but they don't have quite the abilities that he has.
Oh, that's so cute. Before we were chatting about having an interview, I did a deep dive into all of his pictures. And we'll talk about his social media account in a little bit, but anybody listening, you really got to check out Benny and look at his pictures. He's just the epitome of cuteness, but also intelligence too, because what he does, not every dog can do. I don't think Bunsen can do it. Bunsen's really smart, but I think if I tried to put stuff on his feet and made him go skate, I don't think he'd like that. So that's awesome. Sounds like one of a kind
dog.
Well,
Benny can do a lot of other stuff too.
Yeah,
he can do a lot of other stuff too.
One of the things we always ask our guests, you know, and I've been asking all of the Dogs of Twitter parents this too, is for a super fact. We always ask our guests for a fact that they know about something that when they tell people, it kind of blows their mind. Do you have a super fact about Benny or one of your other dogs that you could share with us?
I have a little story about Benny, about the first day I got him, that kind of blew my mind, and that it kind of showed me how smart he was from day one.
Go for it.
We got him. The rescue, you know, okayed us. And when the first day we got him, he came to the house, and we had three other dogs at the time. And he, you know, fit in everything. And then it was time to feed him. I had to decide, you know, I separate all my dogs. They don't eat next to each other. So I thought, well, I don't know where I'm going to feed him yet, but I was going to figure it out. So I went into the laundry room where I keep the dog food. I have a cupboard in there, and I have the dog food, and I scooped out the dog food in each of the four bowls, and you know, his new bowl, and we all walked back into the kitchen, and he waited in the laundry room. He sat perfectly, like a perfect sit, sat right next to the cupboard in the laundry room, and that sat there and just stared at me while I did the food and everything. And then I gave the other three dogs their food, and then I walked back into the laundry room and I put his down. And from that day, every time he eats, he stands in the laundry room or sits in the laundry room. He's never not been in the laundry room when I'm getting the food ready. He just chose to do it on his own.
Oh, what a well-behaved dog too, hey?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't follow the food to the kitchen or anything. He just waited right there, like he picked his spot. This is where I'm going to eat.
Oh, that's great. You know, because some dogs, not all rescue dogs, but occasionally you do get some rescue dogs that maybe have picked up some bad habits due to, you know, they have a challenging life. And it just sounds like that's amazing. Yes. that Benny was able, had such good manners with eating. I know some well-trained dogs or some dogs that weren't rescues have really poor manners when they're eating. So that's great.
It was just weird that he would just do that on his own, just wait in the room like that. I mean, I never saw a dog do that before. And, you know, from that day forward, every time I get the food ready, he just stands or, you know, waits in that room until I bring the food back. I've never seen a dog do that before without being trained to do it. He just chose to do it.
That's awesome. I was going to say we had a golden retriever before Bunsen, and we worked really hard with her. But one of the things she really struggled with was food. She was always trying to steal food from anybody. It could have been because our kids were really little, so they were easy targets if they were ever walking around with a little snack, and she would, you know, try and steal it from them. But do you have anything in the future for Benny you can tell us about? Are there any events upcoming that he's going to be a part of?
Yeah, he's going to be skating at the UNLV hockey game here, the college hockey team that's here, UNLV. He skates for them two or three times a year, and he's done it once this year so far. He did it three times last year, and he will be doing it again this week from today. He'll be skating at their game. And then the local shelter here is teamed up with us, and we're having a Skate with Benny fundraiser for the shelter. And it'll be held at the Cosmopolitan Resort. They have a swimming pool they cover up with ice, an ice rink in the wintertime.
Before we close, where can people find Benny on social media?
He's on Facebook and Instagram, and he's Vegas King Benny, and he's on Twitter, and I think he might just be King Benny, but I think if you also look up Vegas King Benny, he will come up on Twitter too. He has a bigger Instagram account, and there's a lot of pictures on Instagram. People can check out his pictures. He can push a wheelchair, he can climb a tree, he can bounce off the wall, he can do all kinds of stuff. So yeah, his pictures are pretty incredible.
Okay, I will definitely, I apologize, I have only looked at his Twitter, not his Instagram yet, but I will definitely check that out. I'll get Ben Bunsen's account to follow him. Well, you know what, thank you for the short little interview here, as being you know, one of the parents of the dogs of social media. Sounds like life with Benny is an adventure and really rewarding. And that's, you know, that's the best thing we can ask for from our dog companions.
Yes, definitely.
All right. You have a great day and take care.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The next dog we have on the podcast today is Rex the TV Terrier. And I'm joined by Rex's parent. Who is Rex's parent that I'm talking to?
My name is Diane.
Hi, Diane. And Rex is one of the dogs of Twitter. What kind of dog is Rex?
Rex is a white English Bull Terrier.
How old is Rex?
Rex is 7 years old.
And have you had him since he was a puppy?
Yes, we got him when he was 9 weeks old.
So I have a couple questions about the Twitter account and maybe your family. Where in the world are you? You don't have to give us a specific city, but where in the world do you live?
Massachusetts, in the good old USA.
Oh, very good. We're up in, and if you didn't know, we're up in Alberta, Canada, so we're a little more north of you guys.
I could tell from all the snow in Bunsen's videos. Well, we're going to be getting our own snow, I think, tomorrow. It's in the forecast, probably about a foot of snow here.
So I have a question for you. Why is Rex called the TV Terrier? Just for people who maybe don't know.
Well, when we first started his account, the whole idea was that Rex was going to review TV shows because Rex likes to watch TV with us in the evening. And he has definite opinions about which shows he likes and which ones he doesn't. If he likes a show, he watches it. And if he doesn't, he finds a toy to play with and acts really bored and just doesn't even want you to watch it. So the whole concept was he was the TV Terrier because he watches TV and he decides which shows are the good shows.
Really? He watches TV with you? Like he'll look at the screen? Like he'll curl up with you guys?
Oh, he definitely does, and he definitely has opinions on which shows he likes and which ones he finds boring.
That's hilarious. Bunsen could care less what's on TV. I think when he looks at the TV, it's an accident. But I know that some dogs actively watch TV. That's really cool to hear that. What are some of Rex's favorite TV shows?
Well, Rex loves the news mystery shows like Dateline NBC and 48 Hours. Those are his favorites. He has a few sitcoms he enjoys and some dramas. And he's developed quite a few friends on Twitter that are part of the TV business and are producers or on-air talent on some of these shows. So it's gotten to be quite an interesting thing for us to interact with people
from TV. Hey, like they know that would make sense. Like Rex has a fairly big Twitter account, probably the same size I'd say as some of the reporters on those shows.
Oh yes, and in some cases he has a lot more. So we do interact. We live tweet a lot of the shows. He's developed quite a close friendship with the CBS TV news president. They're really good pals, and they keep in touch.
That's hilarious. You know what? I had never watched, what is it, Dateline, you said? That was one of his favorite shows, Dateline?
Yeah,
we don't, like, unless you have cable in Canada, that's not a thing for us Canadians. And then when we were in a hotel, Dateline came on. I was like, hey, that's what Rex always talks about on Twitter. So I tuned in and watched it, and it's pretty gripping, right? Like, every episode is some mystery that they really delve into with, like, you know, really grips you kind of thing.
Oh yeah, there's some really, really compelling stories, and Rex has gotten some really good friends on Dateline, and he was invited to a Dateline premiere party a couple of years ago that I attended for him, and got to meet all the producers and on-air talent for Dateline, and we made some friendships there, so it's great.
That is amazing. that's awesome. well, back to Rex. What are a couple Rex stories you can share with us? Like, what's a couple memorable Rex stories that you'd like people to know about?
Well, I think most people know that Rex is really into sticks, very big sticks usually. And so we go out every day for his stick of the day. And he gets very excited to find just the right stick. A lot of people think that, you know, we go into the deep woods or something for sticks, but he finds them everywhere. Sometimes they're in the middle of the road or on a sidewalk or on a neighbor's lawn. And he doesn't always like the first stick. He'll look at a stick and he'll pick it up and he'll kind of weigh it and see and chew on it a little bit and maybe reject one or two before he finds just the right one.
And he hauls them on a ways, right? Like I've seen, I don't know, 100 videos of him like taking his stick with him.
Yes. Well, we try not to get the sticks too far away from home because he won't accept any help carrying them, and we don't want him to have to carry them too far.
Yeah.
So when we take our morning walk, we usually, you know, if he finds a stick, we may leave it right where it is until it's the way home. But it's usually at least two blocks.
That's funny. Now, I have a question. And if people don't follow Rex, this is also something, some kind of, you could, if people don't follow Rex, you can probably fill them in. You did something really cool with all the sticks he collected. Could you talk about that?
Well, he just had so many sticks piling up in the backyard that it looked like we had a whole family of beavers living back there. So we had to do something with the sticks, and we decided that, you know, they would make some great construction materials. So we first made him a fort, which is like a doghouse out of his sticks that he likes to hang out in when we're outside in the summertime. It's good shade and it's nice in there. And then going with the Game of Thrones theme this past year, we made him a throne out of sticks that we call the Timber Throne, which he occasionally will sit in. But there has to be a cushion on it or he won't get on it because it's too slippery. So he doesn't like to see his sticks burned. We have a fire pit in our backyard, but the only sticks that we can burn in there are like the little odds and ends that are left over after one of his construction projects. And even then, he will take some out of the pile and not allow us to burn them.
Oh, oh, he doesn't want his sticks on fire. That's adorable. Poor guy.
Yeah, well, he took a whole different sort of attitude when he got in that throne. He was feeling pretty special up there.
So would he rule like a Lannister or a Baratheon or a Stark? Who would he, or a Targaryen?
Well, I'm not really all that familiar with Game of Thrones myself, but whoever has the dragons, I think, would definitely be who he would go with.
That goes with his personality, you know, brave and maybe a little stubborn and, really, really sure of himself.
Oh, definitely, yes. And he's also got a very large mouth like a dragon.
He does, yeah. Those type of dogs do have a big mouth. You don't normally see it probably, though, unless he's yawning, right? Like the you don't know that his mouth is that big until he opens it.
True. He's sort of like an alligator.
Okay, so I've got a question, and we asked this of all of our guests, and I've been asking this of the dogs of Twitter accounts, too. Do you have a Rex super fact for us? Something about Rex that not a lot of people know that would blow their mind? If you have a unique Rex super fact, we'd love to know it.
Well, he probably won't be too happy with me telling you this, but he is afraid of the dark. He does not like to go outside in the dark. He doesn't walk in the dark. He's a very brave dog, but if he can't see something, then it's a little frightening to him. So when he goes outside at night, all the lights have to be turned on, and he does a lot of barking to make sure if there's anything there that he can't see, he scares it away.
Oh no. You know, Bunsen is scared of, we did like through the mailbag on the podcast, we talked about a couple things that Bunsen's scared of. And he is terrified of our wheelbarrow. So I think all dogs have something that when you kind of delve into it, it is kind of odd they're scared of. And for Bunsen, he is absolutely terrified of our yellow wheelbarrow. He hates it. He is terrified of it. He barks at it. He doesn't want to go near it. So who knows?
Rex is like that with the vacuum cleaner. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When Bunsen was a puppy, he did not like the vacuum cleaner. He's true to Bernice's kind of personality, extremely chill. So he doesn't get too excited or too upset about pretty much anything. But when he was a puppy, he did not like the vacuum cleaner or really anything that made some scary sounds. He would get kind of upset about that. So,
yeah, Rex never outgrew that that real fear towards, or I could even say aggression towards, a vacuum cleaner. He likes to bite it, so
oh,
it's
no.
Pretty hard to vacuum when he's in the room. I usually boot him out of the room when I'm vacuuming.
Oh no.
We have a few teeth marks on it.
Aw. Well, that's the end of the quick interview for the Dogs of Twitter with Rex the TV Terrier. Where can people find you on social media?
We are on Twitter at Rex the TV Terrier and on Instagram and Facebook also Rex the TV Terrier.
Awesome. Take care. Have a great day.
Thank you so much and thanks for inviting us.
The next guest on the Science Podcast is the parent of Samson the Service Dog, who is an ambassador for service dogs in science. Hi, who are you really quickly? Who is this person I'm talking to? It's not Samson.
It is not Samson. My name is Joey Ramp, and I'm a neuroscientist. I'm a neuroscience research affiliate with the Rhodes Laboratory at the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology, which is located at the University of Illinois. I'm the president and consultant of a company called Empowerability Consulting, which is a company I founded that helps student service dog handlers and educational institutions navigate accommodations for service dog handlers entering science fields and science academics. And sometimes that means mediating between students and administration and faculty, or coming into labs and doing risk assessment to determine what would be appropriate accommodations for a service dog handler, say in a laboratory or core course laboratory. And I also work with different facilities to help write new laboratory service dog policies for inclusion. And then in my spare time, I'm the co-founder of the International Alliance for Ability in Science, which is it's a nonprofit that helps provide students with disabilities and university faculty and administrators resources to help navigate accommodations in science for people with all variety of disabilities. And also in the future, we're hoping to provide some scholarships to disabled scientists who would like to get into STEM.
So it sounds like the amount of hats that you wear in your daily life, you would need like a multiple coat racks to hold them all on.
Absolutely. Yes, I have between the lab work and writing the manuscripts and doing the advocacy work and with the consulting company and also providing resources for scientists with disabilities. It's a full plate for sure, but every bit of that I'm very passionate about, and I'm fortunate and grateful that I'm able to do those things.
Now, as much as we would love to talk to the dogs of Twitter, I'm really excited actually to have you on as a guest to talk about Samson and your work with service dogs and accessibility. Can you tell everybody a little bit about like who Samson is and how does he help you?
Sure. Samson is my service dog, and he is my second service dog. My first service dog, Theo, was retired 3 years ago, and he still lives here with us. But Samson, we've been paired now for 3 years. He's a golden retriever. He's 5 years old, and he's got this like super, it's the best day ever day attitude every single day. And he was trained by an organization called Paws Giving Independence until he was about 18 months old, when then we were paired together and I worked with him for an additional almost 8 months, specializing his training to assist me in a laboratory. I say he is the ambassador for service dogs in science because he is the first service dog that we, to our knowledge, that we cannot find any other documentation to show that any service dog has worked in a neuroscience research laboratory consistently, or has, I know at the University of Illinois, he was the first service dog in their 150-year history to be granted access to a research laboratory and a biology genetics laboratory. So he helps me with, quite a few things. I was in a horse accident in 2006, and I broke like 23 bones, including fractured vertebrae, and I sustained a brain injury.
Oh,
and,
no.
Consequently, I have done a lot of recovery, but I still have some balance and mobility limitations. I lost the ability to speak, and cognition was offline for a while. And so I've had to rebuild a lot of those things. But I also ended up with very severe post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. So Samson knows about 140 word commands. Sometimes he can differentiate between single words and entire sentences. And he provides a lot of balance for me. Because of the brain injury, I end up with some vertigo sometimes. And I can balance off of him. He braces if I have to stand or if I have to lean over and pick anything up. He can pick things up for me off the floor, which helps with my back and with the vertigo. He helps pull me upstairs. He can retrieve things like backpacks or even medicines. And sometimes he stands between me and crowds to make sure that I can have enough space. And then he can also alert to some anxious behaviors. If I get under a lot of stress, I lose the ability to speak. And so I start rubbing my hands in a way that he notices, and he'll start nudging my leg to let me know that I'm doing that so that I can figure out how to manage those symptoms and keep them minimized. And that way I can do presentations, and I can work in a lab, and I can go grocery shopping. So, I mean, he helps me 24/7 every single day of his life.
Oh my goodness. He sounds like the best good boy there ever was.
He is.
I'm just smiling. It's hard to see in a podcast scenario, and I'm just smiling from ear to ear. I'm just, It's so cool that the dog has been trained like that to help you, because you have really important work to do, right? You had mentioned you do research with brain injury and PTSD as part of your science. Is that correct?
Right now I'm working, aside from working on some manuscripts and doing accessibility for service dogs in science, we are just finishing a manuscript on early life adversity and PTSD. And my hope is to go farther into research and work on the neurological, the molecular cellular basis for PTSD, the genetic aspect of it, the epigenetic aspect, the gene environment connection to the trauma, the perception, and the development of PTSD. Right now, I'm a little bit on hold with moving forward with that until we can develop some new service dog policies for laboratories.
Right. Could you speak about that? It seems like something that the public needs a little bit more education with dogs and accessibility, especially in science. I know you had mentioned that before. What are some of the challenges that you see there?
Well, I mean, it's something that is time to start taking a look at. There's over century-long history that shows the efficacy of service dogs assisting people with disabilities, going back to the first guide dog. And over the last four decades, service dog roles have expanded, and they assist people with hearing who are deaf or hard of hearing. They assist people on the autism spectrum. They can do some medical assistance with people with diabetes or seizures and or post-traumatic stress disorder. So we're seeing a larger influx of service dogs out in our communities and on our campuses. And then on campus, student services are starting to register more students with disabilities. So we are going to start seeing a lot more service dog handlers on our college campuses. But unfortunately, the most university campuses, either don't have a service dog policy, or they outline only exclusion protocol for service dogs entering any kind of STEM field. And we talk a lot about diversity and inclusion initiatives, and especially in education and also in STEM, like the National Science Foundation places a really high priority on the cultivation of a diverse STEM workforce. Yet what we're seeing is a disconnect between the initiatives and all of the talk and what's actually being put into action and put into place. So I would like to start seeing a little more more of the, not only the cultivation, but the follow through on inclusion. The thought of having a service dog in a laboratory has been a very contentious topic, and there have been concerns mm-hmm. about the safety of the service dog in a lab. But over the course of the last 10 years, I've had a service dog working in a laboratory environment and developed a lot of templates, even with the American Chemical Society, to help provide safety, almost like a skill checklist for service dogs entering science laboratories, like wearing the same personal protective clothing, like goggles and lab coat and boots, et cetera, and having specific placing needs so they're out of the way of traffic. And so I'm hoping that, we can focus policymakers to make a more inclusive service dog policy for laboratories and academics, so that these people coming in on these campuses have access to the core course laboratories needed for any STEM degree, even a bachelor's degree, or going into graduate work, or following into maybe a biomedical career, which right now is a huge barrier for them.
Right. You exclude people who otherwise, if you don't have your service dog, you either don't feel safe or cannot do the work in a lab. And without those policies in place, you just don't that is close to you. It's just over. That is not a career path you get to take. So that's really interesting that you're saying that. And it's good education for the public at large too, about just how important service dogs are for people that need them.
Absolutely. I think that is kind of a misconception, is that a service dog is a luxury rather than a medical necessity. And even according to the Americans Disabilities Act, the ADA, they outline service dogs as medical equipment, and they provide an invaluable service. Some people use them for different things. Some people cannot always have their service dog with them for a variety of reasons, but other people who have to have their service dog with them around the clock, 24/7, still should have access to equal opportunities in education and the workforce, as long as, I mean, these reasonable accommodations can easily be made with minimal impact, if any impact, to the laboratory environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Bunsen, just to give the listeners a bit of the difference. Bunsen is a good dog. Bunsen is a well-trained dog. He is not a therapy dog. He is not a service dog. So when he gets to come into my school and interact with kids, that is an absolutely different situation to you who needs their service dog. And one thing you were mentioning as well is that just because someone looks able-bodied doesn't necessarily at all mean they don't need their service dog with you. Could you speak a bit to that?
There's been a huge rise in people with non-visible disabilities. Like I mentioned, people with medical conditions like diabetes or seizures or PTSD. Someone like myself, I've had fractured vertebrae and I have nerve damage and I had a brain injury. But if you were to look at me, I look perfectly normal and I look perfectly fine. And people make the assumption then that because I look like I don't need any kind of medical assistance, any kind of medical aid, whether that be a wheelchair or a cane or a service dog, that I can leave my service dog behind, or I can be separated from him over a certain amount of time. And that, you know, that is, as I am the person with the disability, that is for me to decide. And no one else can make that decision for me, whether I'm comfortable or whether I can navigate my environment safely and medically safe without my service dog. Or in my case, I am rarely, if ever, without him. And he's a very important component to my success in completing a degree and getting into research and being able to give presentations and educate. And with Samson as my service dog, I can lead an independent life. I mean, he has given me the ability to just be independent on my own. I don't have to rely on an assistant or a caregiver. So he allows me just to live my day-to-day life, and even to go to the grocery store, to do social engagements, to go to work, go into a lab, or, you know, I meet with different people from trauma backgrounds. I also, meet with universities, and I travel, and I couldn't do any of those things without his assistance. So, I think that's something that, you know, I would really like people to understand, is when they see someone with a service dog, that you can't make any kind of judgment just on appearance. That person may be relying on that service dog's assistance to stay healthy and independent. And that's something that gets lost in a conversation a lot of times, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in the media, it's sensationalized when you have the odd person who is abusing, they don't have a service dog, they have a comfort animal, and it's not well-behaved, it's not trained. I think those are few and far between, but that's where perhaps the confusion comes from. Like, the amount of training that Samson has to be your service dog is leagues different from us getting Bunsen through like top level behavior training, it's completely different training. There's no way. I think you'd have to train a dog, and you could speak to that. You have to train a dog from when they're a puppy to be a service dog. You can't just take a Bunsen dog and then throw them into it. The chances of success are low to begin with, just because the amount of the specific training they need is so varied.
That's true. There are legal loopholes that have allowed people to take advantage of the system, the people that either they want to, you know, they have a valid need for an emotional support animal, but that emotional support animal doesn't have the training that you're talking about. And so they get out into environmental stimulus that is just too much for them to handle. And then they act out and misbehave. And
yeah.
Same way with, I mean, people who just want to take their pet, say on a train or an airplane or something, will put a vest on their animal. And you can buy them online. It's crazy. You can Google it and tons of websites come up. A lot of states here in the United States, though, have enacted service dog laws that will make it sometimes a misdemeanor, sometimes jail time or $1,000 fine for misrepresenting a pet as a service dog. You can, to address what you said about Bunsen, I'm sure that there may be some cases where you can take an older dog and turn them into a really good service dog. But there are all kinds of different breeds that can be a service dog, but their training does generally start when they're young, either from a 8 to 10 week old puppy up to sometimes or a 6 or 7 month old puppy can start in training. But good training takes about 2 years, but then the training never really stops either. Mm-hmm. But it's a very focused training. And I think 70% of service dogs that enter training in organizations don't make it. And so there's only maybe 30% of dogs who enter into formal training that actually make it as a service dog, because the environment, the demands and everything takes a very particular dog who can manage that and balance it well, provide the assistance that they that their handler needs, and also, you know, stay healthy themselves so they don't become too stressed out or too reactive, or they can follow all the tasks that they've been taught or that that person with the disability needs them to do. If they start getting off, say a guide dog starts forgetting to stop at a light, that could be really problematic, or someone could fall off a curb. So these dogs have to stay very fine-tuned, and they have to love their job to do it well. And that takes a very special dog and a lot of training.
Yeah, that just this lets you know how special the service dogs are. We had, like, occasionally there are crises in education, like at my school, and I was asked, I was like, hey, can you bring Bunsen in to help with this emotional crisis that we're having? And I had to say, like, as much as I would love Bunsen to come, I'm like, he's not a therapy dog. He's a good dog. We looked at putting him through therapy dog training, and he just doesn't have the right personality. Like, just because he's a really good dog doesn't necessarily mean that he would even get through the therapy dog training. And that just speaks again to just how important and how special these dogs are. And I'm just so glad that you're here sharing your story.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. The training goes, you know, far beyond the basic obedience. I think a lot of people think, well, my dog is really well behaved at home. He can sit, he can lay down. He likes to see friends. We take him to the park and everything is fine. But when you get them out into an environment where there's sirens and there's people and there's all kinds of noises and things, and they have to stay focused on their job and not, you know, be afraid or be reactive. And that's a really important skill that I really would like people to understand, that no matter how good their dog is at home, unless they really have the temperament and the drive for it, it's just not safe to bring them out into public into that type of situation, that high stress environment, like you were mentioning with Bunsen, in even therapy dogs go out into that really stimulating environment, and that it's really emotionally charged as well. And that's mm-hmm. that's really important to remember.
Yeah. Now, just switching gears a bit, it is, Samson is so well behaved and so well trained, and he is so important to you. But we also have to give you and some credit. It went viral, I think. You had a video of Samson in his science gear. And yes. I think people connected with that because it was so adorable. And then again, that's why it's so important that you get your story out, that he's, of course, wearing that gear because he is your support animal in the lab. But it doesn't take away from the visual that he is absolutely an adorable animal. And I was wondering if you could share with us some adorable stories, or maybe every day is just an adorable day with Samson.
Well, that's the thing is he has this knack to know when he has to be serious and when he can be goofy. And he also knows how to make me laugh, and he likes to make me laugh a lot. So it really is. Aww. He does. There are really too many to count. Samson is just like a ray of sunshine wherever he goes. And even though he's assisting me medically, I see people walk by and they look like they're having a bad day, or they're frowning, or they've got something on their mind or whatever. And you can see them make eye contact with Sam, and just a smile just comes onto their face. And because he's so gregarious and he's so happy and he's so happy doing his job, you can't not smile when you look at Samson's face. He's got that big fluffiness going on, and he also loves everyone, big or small, no matter what species. He's just pure goodness wrapped up in this huge fluffy white fur. And, he is very serious about his job and can be very serious, but on his off time, he likes to run around and roll and throw things and just be a dog and make me laugh and do goofy roo-roo-roos. And just thinking about him makes me smile. I mean, he's laying down here looking at me, of course. That's not helping. But anyhow,
he's just a love. I really hope when we get to the end and you talk about where people can follow Samson, that people do follow him. I'm just on your Twitter account right now, and it's your pinned tweet of him in his science gear, just being goofy but serious. And it's got like over 100,000 views, which is incredible. So cute.
Yes.
So
cute. Well, I'm really happy that people did connect to that, to see what he is capable of doing and service dogs are capable of doing in a laboratory. You know, when he goes in, he does wear goggles and boots and safety gear. And he can lay on a mat for up to 4 hours. And when he lays there, he watches me constantly. He never takes his eyes off me. He will come to me if I need him, or he will stay where he is. And you know, it makes me happy to see so many people, especially people on Twitter in academics and in STEM academics, who felt a connection to that. And we can mm-hmm. see how to make it inclusive for people with service dogs. And so that makes me super happy that everyone did like that and connect to it. And I go back and look at it sometimes just because he makes me laugh.
I love that. I think that's one of the reasons why Bunsen's account took off and is growing, is because dogs are just, their personality and their essence are the best of humanity. And they're just distilled from our, whatever good traits humans have, we have put them into dogs. And I think that's why people connect with them. And of course, there's not a lot of dogs that are being used in science as either advocates or to spread information or mascots. And that's kind of what Bunsen is. He's kind of a science mascot. And I definitely don't want to take away from the important work that Samson does. Bunsen does not come into the lab with me, with my high school kids, and do experiments. But Samson does with you. And I think that's a very cool difference. And if we could close with our super fact, we ask our guests all the time to share a super fact with us. And it's just something that they know that most people don't. And when they tell people, it kind of blows their mind. Do you have a super fact you could share with us?
I think because my work is a lot on PTSD and the limbic system and the neurological underpinnings of that, I think one of my favorite things is that your brain can process an image that your eyes have seen for as little as like 13 milliseconds, which is less time than it takes for you to blink. That's why if something falls off the counter, you can catch it without thinking, because it goes in your eyeballs and it bypasses the logical part of your brain and it goes straight to the amygdala and the hippocampus and you just react. Of course, you can jump out of way of a car or something like that, but that also is why people with PTSD are more hypervigilant and reactive to things without pre-thought. It's like a rapid defense mechanism for survival that has served us well over the centuries, as long as it stays regulated. So I think that's a cool thing.
That is so interesting that you made that connection. I might steal that analogy when trying to talk to kids about PTSD, is that it's just a hypersensitivity to keeping, you know, it's your survival instinct and it's just been turned up to 11 or something like that.
For people with PTSD, say they had gotten in a car accident and they were in an accident with a red car. And so they're driving down the road and all of a sudden they feel anxious and they don't know why. Their brain saw a red car somewhere that logically you didn't even process. It's completely subconscious, but yet it activates your limbic system, like I said, which is great if you're out in the wild and there's a lion stalking you or something, but sometimes it gets a little more challenging when you're just in everyday life.
Great explanation. Thank you. Well, we're at the end of the interview. Thank you so much for being a guest. Where can people find Samson on social media?
Well, he's on Twitter at Samson_dog. He's also on Facebook, and it's a long name, but it's Samson the Service Dog and Theo the Labrador, because it was originally Theo's page. And you can follow us on Instagram at Samson_service_dog.
Yay! Thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest one more time. And the information you've given us is so interesting and so important.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. And give Bunsen a hug.
This week on Woo or Wow, we're switching things up a little bit, and I'm really excited. We have Ben Rathert with us. Ben is one of our patrons at the Patreon page, and he's going to be co-hosting with me for Woo or Wow. How are you doing today, Ben?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm so good. I'm so excited to talk to you. You've been a patron of Bunsen's for a while. Where do you live in the world?
I am in Georgia, just south of Atlanta.
Nice. And how did you first find Bunsen? I'm curious now that I've been thinking about it. How did you find Bunsen the first time?
I was actually just going around Twitter, just kind of discovered dog Twitter, and Bunsen actually popped up on the replies to one of the We Rate Dogs tweets. And I was like, hey, this looks like an awesome dog. Let me check it out. And sure enough, I was correct. Bunsen was a very, very awesome dog, and went ahead and started following and have not regretted it. Absolutely love everything that you put out with the account, all of the science stuff and all of the positivity that you guys do.
Thanks, Ben. Yeah, I'm happy you're here. So here's how things are going to be switched up a bit. Normally in Woo or Wow, I kind of talk to myself, but this time around, I'm going to read you the statements and then you're going to try and figure out which one you think is the fake statement and the real statement. So for those of you, if you're just tuning in Woo or Wow, I read three statements. Two of them are woo, they're fake. And one of them is wow, it's real. And Ben's going to try and puzzle his way through them. Are you ready, Ben?
I am ready. I have several podcast episodes I've listened to. I mean, I'm pretty much current, so I think I might be able to suss this out.
Yay. All right. Okay, here we go. Statement number one. A zoologist named Levick didn't make the ill-fated trek in 1912 with British explorer Robert Scott to the South Pole. Scott's whole expedition unfortunately died. The zoologist stayed back at base camp, and while he was holed up there waiting for the return of his friends, he observed from some very strange behavior of killer whales. And he recounted the behavior of the killer whales, such as they were doing some very interesting behaviors in the water that he assumed or thought were same-sex kind of acts and very promiscuous behavior. He recorded it, and it was kept under wraps for 80 years. What do you think so far?
Okay. You know, that's a tough one, because I can definitely see that being a thing. I can definitely see that being held under wraps for quite some time. That's a tough one. That one's not an obvious.
Not sure.
But I'm not sure. I will hold judgment on that one for now.
Ready for statement two? Statement two. Humpback whales in the South Atlantic have went from near extinction to not so. In the 1940s, the numbers were only in the 100. Like 200 to 300 humpbacks, and now they're over 20,000 strong. So that's humpback whales in the South Atlantic. That's the second statement.
Okay. Humpback whales have rebounded back. All right.
Yep. Okay, here's the third statement.
Okay.
It's about bats. Vampire bats, vampire bats drink nothing but blood, and when they are captured and raised in captivity with other bats, something goes askew with their ability to bond with other vampire bats. And after they are released, rarely do they maintain stable relationships with their captive mates.
Okay. That one, I feel comfortable kind of primarily thinking that one's woo.
Okay.
So now it's down to the whales here.
Yeah. The killer whales getting jiggy with it in unexpected ways. And humpback whales rebounding in the South Atlantic from a few hundred to over 20,000. So there's discounted statement three is woo. So now the two that are left, one's woo and one's wow.
And I want to say I read something about the humpback whales coming back recently, but I want to say that I read a lot of things that I may or may not remember correctly. Just because I like the hope that brings, I am going to say that the humpback whales rebounding their numbers is definitely the wow.
All right. And that the killer whales one and from 1912 is woo.
Yes. I'm going to stick my neck out on this one, say killer whales woo, humpback whales wow.
Okay. All right. Let's see how you did. Let's start with the third statement about vampire bats. That one is woo. You're right. It is woo. Vampire bats have very close bonds that are made to other vampire bats because if they don't feed within 3 days, they'll die. And they've developed a really close kind of ability to make quick bonds with other vampire bats, because if one bat is starving in a colony, another bat that was lucky enough to feed will actually regurgitate the blood to keep the other bat alive. So bats that are kept in captivity form very tight bonds, just like bats in the wild.
Oh, that's really cool. I did not know that.
Yeah, neither did I. But good job. You got that one. Good job. You got one then. All right. So we're down to the two. You got a 50-50 here. The statement that was true is the humpback whales one. You got that one correct. Good job.
Woohoo!
Yeah, it's pretty hopeful, hey, that the humpback whales have come back and rebounded so well.
That is. It's very hopeful.
Yeah. Do you know why their numbers were so low in the, like, around the 1920s to the 1940s?
Want to go with the tried and true hunting and excessive killing of their numbers, because we, A, didn't know that animals weren't infinitely spawning, and B, didn't really care much outside of ourselves at that point.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. It has 100% to do with whaling and the changing of laws to protect them. Yeah, so that's really exciting.
Awesome.
Now, the woo one about the killer whales is not correct, but it's not killer whales he observed. It was penguins. So, yeah, the zoologist took very detailed and shockingly accurate observations of a whole bunch of penguins doing some things that people thought at that time were very unpenguin-like, because they would tell, you know, it was taught and kids thought that penguins would mate for life. And he observed some very different behaviors that turned out to today to be very true. And it was kept under wraps because he was kind of embarrassed of his finding.
I can definitely see that. I mean, I am a huge fan of penguins, so that's really cool information I also didn't know.
And I don't know a lot about killer whales, but killer whales are not way down by the South Pole either, right? So that's not their native area that they swim in.
Okay, yeah, I did not know that they didn't hang out down there.
I thought there was a chance you wouldn't know, so that's why you use killer whales. I was going to use another whale, but then you're like, how would you know, those other whales kind of stay away from people, so. Good job, you got it right.
Awesome, I feel like I have done my daughter proud, so.
This has been really fun. Thank you for helping co-host Woo or Wow this week.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's really fun to be able to do this, and I've been excited ever since you mentioned this was going to be a thing, so I'm really happy to be able to do this, and I'm really glad you asked.
Yay.
So thank you.
For people who are listening, this is a thing I think we're going to switch up Woo or Wow with in season two, is we'll have a guest host for all of the Woo or Wow sections. It might make the Woo or Wow a little bit longer, but I think people probably get sick of me talking, and this will be good to have somebody with a different perspective and different voice on the line too.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah. Okay. You take care, Ben. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. You guys take care up there and say hi to Bunsen for me, please.
We will. He's actually sitting right by my feet. He kind of tucks in when I do the podcast because he knows he has to be quiet.
Best seat in the house.
Hey guys, just a quick note from our second sponsor of the podcast this week, and that's Genius Lab Gear. If you use the code Bunsen10, you'll get 10% off everything at geniuslabgear.com. They sent Bunsen an adorable bandana that says PhD Emotional Support Dog. It's nice and big, so if you've got a big dog, it's a bandana that fits them. They also have a bunch of cool stuff at their website. One of my favorites is the Science is for Everyone sticker and the credit card sized metal stencil for drawing organic molecules. That's really cool. We'll have a link to Genius Lab Gear in the show notes to the show. They're a really cool little startup trying to make a whole bunch of fun gear for scientists and science lovers everywhere. Check them out. That's at geniuslabgear.com.
Anyway, I've opened up the mailbag, and it's time for another episode of The Mailbag with Adam. Okay, the first question on Bunsen's Twitter, on the poll, is, does Bunsen have a dog crush? I don't know. I have no idea. Mom, do you know the answer?
Well, you know, we do have my niece, and she has a dog named Sadie. I'm not sure if you follow on Twitter. I'm sure that her picture has shown up with Bunsen. But interestingly, Sadie came over a few times. She's been over a couple times, and she plays out Bunsen.
How is that possible?
She plays with him until he can't move.
Yeah. And she is high energy, and she does not stop. Can't stop, won't stop. And Bunsen's like, whoa, can you slow down a little bit? And she's like, nope. And then there's like a moment of respite.
Yeah, he like flops on the ground. He's like, ugh, and he just like pancakes on the ground.
Yeah, and then it's settled. And then one false move or one quick move, and Sadie's up and at him again. But I think he likes her.
He does.
In short doses.
She's really agile, hey? Adam, like, she's bouncy. Oh, yeah.
She's really bouncy.
And she's super cuddly.
Oh, yeah.
And super cute.
She actually jumped over Bunsen when they were playing, like, sprung over top of him.
Yeah.
She's pretty jumpy. She'd be good at basketball. She's got good hops. Anyway, the second question on the poll is, are we getting a second dog? Now, I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I feel like getting a second dog would be great. Like, we could get a Samoyed. If you don't know what those are, they're adorable. They are like fluffy cloud things, and yeah. But I don't know if the Samoyed will have an Instagram page as popular as Bunsen's.
Well, the cool thing is that this summer coming up, I'll be done my master's. Actually, I'll be done in the spring. And we like to get our dogs in the summer as Jason and I are both off as teachers. So that gives us more time to do training and socialize the dog and do things like that. We have more time for all of that and more love to give to the puppy. So I don't know. I would love to get another golden retriever. I just would. I just loved our old one so much. But I love Bunsen too. But I just think, I just really like something about those dogs.
Yeah, they have such an infectious smile, and they're really affectionate. Not that Bunsen's not. It's just a different kind of affection. And it's a different type of dog. Chris knows this now, but she was super busy working on her master's, and Adam was off with doing his band in the summer. And I would be alone with Bunsen every night, and I would just troll Kijiji looking at puppies. And I found a puppy named Lemonade, who is the most adorable little golden retriever.
Yeah, and Jason said, oh, look who I bought today. And I brought Lemonade home, and I said, what? But there was no Lemonade.
I think if we do get a second dog, we have to go with the science names. And I think if we got a golden retriever and we got a girl, we should name her Beaker.
Aww.
So we'd have Bunsen and Beaker.
So do you think our next dog should be female then? Just to kind of even out the estrogen / testosterone? Because I'm outnumbered here with the three of you.
I don't think it matters, really. Adam says Samoyed. We're leaning towards golden retriever. What do people in Twitterland think?
I don't know.
Anyway, that's the end of the mailbag. It's been nice answering your questions. Send in any suggestions on the Twitter page, and yeah, we might do it in the last episode of the mailbag. See you next week.
Oh boy, this was a supersized part one of episode 25, and so the second part's coming next week with three more dogs of Twitter. It was just too much to pack into one episode, so we split it into two. Next week's episode is the last episode of season one. It's hard to believe that the podcast was only an idea at the end of June. And for a starting podcast, it's done so well. It's because of our listeners, and it's because of our patrons. Here's a quick shout out to our top tier patrons on Patreon: Andrea Persons, Liz Button, Ben Rathert, Bianca Hyde, Chris Hemhold, Elizabeth Bourgeois, Karen Beth St. George, Kathleen Zucher, Marianne McNally, Carmen Presidio, and Catherine Lynch. The list is growing. It's amazing. Special thanks to the three dogs and their dog parents this week, who took their time to talk to us about what makes their animal so special. I think if I was to interview every person who has a dog, they'd be able to tell me why their dog is so special. And speaking of special dogs, let's close with Bunsen's motto: for science, empathy, and cuteness!